private enterprises. They became owned by the farmers. Many of them still do exist, except that there is no direct relationship between those co-ops today and the state. But with that deregulation and with those institutions becoming private enterprises, it meant that there was massive exodus, skilled exodus, from the side of government to private enterprises. Not that that is a bad thing, that's why we've got a strong agricultural sector, but it meant that the capacity of the state became weakened. And RECAP is a fairly new program which we started in 2010, and we still learn from many, many mistakes and discovering some of the complexities of the of farming and agriculture in general. I thought that we should thank you.
Thank you very much, Another one.
Those are
the owners of the farm, because in Kensington, all of the farms that we have visited in the Kensington, most of them, they have that kind of neighborhood. Another thing is, I want to check about the fruit irrigation scheme. As soon as we can get to the names of those irrigation schemes that are working everywhere, or others are working.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also think there's lots of really useful information in this presentation. I think, and based on that, I also have a couple of questions. One of the areas of concern for me is also the number of farmers being trained. There was one example mentioned earlier of Gauteng. Much as Gauteng now doesn't have lots of farming areas, there's supposed to be an agricultural college up and running. There's at the center of the entire area of South Africa, which in itself is probably the major farming area of South Africa. So that there's no farmers being produced there, coming from the Gauteng legislature, it is a source of major concern. Again, you link it up to the objectives of this program of personal productivity, creating a farming class that was destroyed, recreating a farming class that was destroyed, and was also referenced back to the flow people. I think the lack of trained farmers, I think, is central to the success of this program, so it's a source of concern. I think it also links up to the eventual sustainability of these ventures. So that's one concern that I have. The other concern that also came up was the lack of co-investment of strategic partners. Now, I think it's a sort of a truism in any business environment: if you don't form a partnership with somebody that is not willing to put their own money into a venture. So I think that's a source of concern that I would like to ask how that is being approached. And then another question around beneficiary selection, and I think leads up to the production or the churning out of farmers, people capable of farming. How are beneficiaries of failed programs that might have been part and parcel of the reason of the failure of such projects, how is that being dealt with? Are new beneficiaries selected? Is the process identifying the beneficiaries that are the right kind of people willing to farm? Or is it the same people that's continued with, and how is beneficiary selection being dealt with? And then I also have a couple of concerns around the measurements of success. You mentioned a couple of times in the presentation, you referred to profitability and profit sharing. Whilst most certainly a measure of success should obviously be profit, and I would imagine shareholder value as well, but does that profit sharing include the VTAC funding? In other words, is the profit measured with the money coming in from the state, or is it profitable with us at the end of the 5-year cycle, especially is it profitable afterwards? And I also think that relates to the improvement of the individuals involved in their livelihoods. Is the measurement in place to look at whether there's the beneficiaries or the farmers, or whether they are their own livelihoods and their own weekly cash flow in terms of their own households, how's that being affected? I think one of the workshops that we recently had in Kempton Park, I think it was Ruth Hall that made the point that given where a lot of the beneficiaries come from, what is the impact on their livelihoods? So I think I was wondering whether that's being measured. Then in terms of the signing powers of strategic partners, I think there's also, one can also argue the point the other way, that do strategic partners have the right to kick out farmers? Do we have situations, I happen to be aware of a situation like this, to what extent is there also managerial skill and governance skill for the business being transferred to farmers? Of course, what I'm picking up here is sort of a concern with strategic, and I understand that strategic partners being sort of removed, but I think the opposite is also true. So I think the real question is what governance structures are in place, and I think it was correctly pointed out, for a business. It's not just a farm. What's the governance structures? How do you approach that? I think, just as a comment, I think certainly what I would like to see, and I'm suggesting this to the committee, to measure the success of recap and of land redistribution schemes, things like return on investment, return on equity, profitability, I think it's a 5-minute limit to police politicians. I think there are easily a couple of very simple measurements and ratios that can be used to see whether something is successful or not. And I think that those are not necessarily administrative measurements that the government might use, but actually measurements intrinsic to the business itself. And yes, I think that's enough for that. Thanks.
Operationally, how does this program link with the initiatives of local government? this is the problem. Have you done any assessment which tells you the socio-economic impact of the program? Right. I've seen the statistics. So many people have been trained, and so on and so on and so forth. But now the socio-economic impact. I'm asking this question because it's one of the objectives, you know, of the program. So one would expect that naturally you would touch on that beyond just giving us the statistics to say so much as we spend and so many farmers that we have now and near exit and so on. And that would help. Now, challenges, what challenges are being experienced? This refers now to slide 17. Where you notice that there are three provinces for which there is zero expectation that there are people, farmers who are about to exit. That's what makes these three provinces because that is KZN, Limpopo, and the Northern Cape. What sort of challenges have you come across there, and how are you addressing it? This now, look at that, this has been the number of farmers that have been trained in those provinces. The reason I'm asking this as a case training, let alone any other capital that you put, is because my critical experience with training adults is that after 3 years or so, you find that they've practically forgotten over 90% of the training that you did with them, that you benefited them with, unless there is a lender who is constantly there. My other experience is that even if there is a mentor, if he is not resident there, okay, he comes like once a month or something, leaves them with instructions. The first thing they do is to provide ways and means of not doing what the mentor, left them to do, kind of homework, as it were. It's like a practical experience that. Now, what strategies do you have to sustain the information that has been transferred, the skills that have been transferred to the farm? Because I think that's where the rub lies. As you'll find that you train someone now, literally one farmer in New Chacha said to me, this was in 2012, he said, "So Daddy, how on earth, this is a 50-something year old lady, how on earth do you expect that the training that you gave us in 2010 is still in our heads? Please, don't have that kind of expectation." You know, that's why I'm asking this question. That's the practical experience I had. And I know that we need to address that. Maybe your mentors, the mentors that you're talking about here are residents. If they are residents, there is a possibility of collusion along the line. They get too familiar with one another. And look, because for some of the social, human, dynamics that you will find. So in your risk analysis, these are some of the factors that you need to be ready to counter. Page 23, notice that these people open accounts which are going to be cosigned, a social partner, the farmer. Now, when it comes to procurement, are they subject? Now, when it comes to procurement, must they still comply with the standard legislation like your PMFA and so on, which I know can be a bit of an impediment when it comes to time management, or which laws, do they have to comply with? Because the bank, the money is in their account, they need to buy manure and so on. Which laws, regulate their procurement? But you are given the notes, negative remark you have made about how they take care of their funds. And I think that is all for now. Thank you.
I was listening to the conversation.
of rivers and dams. That is part of land reclamation in terms of ensuring that the land does not get washed away into rivers and ultimately in the ocean. And that in doing those kinds of activities, those departments actually involve communities, because we are an activist parliament. And and a consultative, we believe in this government actually and the ruling party, that people need to be taken on board whenever anything is done. And say that also that may even lead into whatever programs we have being rejected by the court. If there is no proper public participation and consultation. And then this chairperson, because we've got the agricultural profession, the Department of Environment, in province we have Mpumalanga, Limpopo, agricultural, whatever, we have an agricultural center and all this. And at the same time, we can look at funding, because there are NGOs that are involved in training and they get funded internationally to do training for the same communities that we are serving. So why can't we see who are those NGOs, what value are they bringing, what value can we add to them, you know, in terms of our contributions to it. And then at the same time, there are other institutions like tertiary institutions like universities. I'm still talking about training of farmers, chairperson, if I'm not listening. And some of these institutions would be academic institutions. Many universities have a zoology and whatever, agricultural sciences section. And university, and the, mostly the value of universities is not in the number of graduates they produce, but it's in the amount and value of research that university produces. That is what it makes it better than other universities. So we've got a niche there that we can cover ourselves in those universities when it comes to training. And all universities and institutions that train students, the students must go and do practical work. How do we link all these efforts together as part of training more people but creating better resources from ourselves and then achieving more with less by using the partners that we have? There are, the land that we are giving to people in most cases is land that is not of, is of low value in some other areas. Like if you're claiming land in Sukuniland. Sukuniland has a problem of desert encroachment. I'm not sure they are. Whatever studies they do, they don't look at areas like Sukuniland. Because if you say you want to do farming in Sukuniland, why are you going to farm on? The texture of the soil is changing, it's becoming sandy every year. But at the same time, people still live there and they are able to scrape a living from that headland, which means that there is some form of indigenous knowledge that is in that community. So how do you plant and produce food on this, in between the rocks? What value are we aiming at? What is this that means? We can help these communities, for instance, and even them helping us to understand you know, the indigenous technologies that are used. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry, just to check if I'm telling you.
Thank you very much, Chairman. There were lots of questions that are from the other side comments. And the government just wants to try some questions. As well as the team is going to respond to those questions. Thank you.
We will, thank you, Honorable Chair, we will share the
also influenced by the improvement plan we have had to put together to enhance the progress. But even last year, the department on its own, together with the farmers, we met in the Free State in Fonte, the minister himself facilitated the workshop. We were with the farmers, we were evaluating how the program was going. So we are engaging this continuous business improvement, appreciating that we are not the experts in this particular area. We must continuously learn together with the farmers. And then one other issue that relates to the continuous business improvement are the issues of risk management and the issues of governance. We have got a contract, the contract, the agreement that are entered into, the tripartite agreement between the department, the strategic partner, and the farm. That is currently under review, precisely to attend to some of the deficiencies and weaknesses that have been picked up. Some weaknesses will include this unilateral decision from where a farmer will be unhappy with a mentor and or kick them out, or acquisition of things that may not be directly related to the business enterprise or in the business plan. The issues of accountability, sometimes strategic partners are not as accountable as they should. After we have made the disbursement, because as much as the farmer can concur to the acquisition of certain inputs, the person who has got a contractual obligation to account to the department for expenditure is the strategic partner. Now, you would want the strategic partner that after 90 days of having spent the fund to be able to provide you with all the documentary proof that they have done so. In some instances, they will take a very long time. Now, when the AG comes to you and you don't have those documents, then you're in trouble. Because you spend money, for the AG, money is spent, but your records are not reconciled with the money that is spent. You do know that indeed this works as that, but physical documentation is not, they will say the portfolio of evidence is not at your disposal. So the contract is currently being reviewed with the aim of strengthening it. Obviously, by implication, if you review the contract in the way that we are saying whatever we are reviewing it, it has got implications on the policy itself. That we may have changed something in the policy itself. So I just thought that I respond to those at a general level. But the one that reading is about how to reverse this. The deregulation came in far too quickly, very early in the transition, and went in far too deep, leaving the beneficiaries of land reform with very little support. That's the function of the developmental partner. The question we are trying to answer as we are trying to implement the national development. The redefining the role of institutions such as the land bank and many other agricultural institutions. How can they play a more prominent role, a developmental role, as opposed to playing as if they were like those private co-ops themselves. But also the state trying to appreciate that it is not the state itself that is going to create these jobs. It's the farmer who needs to be supported so that they are able to create those jobs. I think when we started the policy, we were quite clear about what we wanted to achieve. One of the things that we're not that crisp and crystal clear In fact, you will notice that if you look at the 1,500 odd farms that have been recertified, they are coming from a pool of no less than 5,000 farms nationwide. Now, various provinces have acquired varying degrees of hectares. In other words, KZN has acquired more hectares than Gauteng and than Western Cape. Mpumalanga has acquired more hectares than Eastern Cape. So you've got those variations across the country in terms of the amount of land that we've acquired. Of the over 8 million hectares we've acquired, we can show you which province has bought the most, which province has bought the smallest. But even if you were to look at the amount of money spent, you find that as much as we have spent little money, and we've bought a smaller number of hectares in the Western Cape, you may find that we've spent quite a lot of money in the Western Cape, because land in the Western Cape is very expensive too. So all those kinds of variables have got to be taken into account. There are certain commodities across the country. Mpumalanga would be known for its strength in the grain. So if you have a partnership with an organization like Grain SA, they will be supporting more than one farm. So if you then start comparing the number of mentor and the number of farms supported, those are some of the things that must be taken into account. In KZN, the sugar cane that is dominant. There will be two or three sugar millers that will be supporting maybe 300 farmers that are recipients of the cane. So those are the other things, those are the other factors that come in. So those things do influence a lot the distribution of the research and the number of mentors. These are being the other forms of strategic planning. I think I'm trying to deal with those policy related issues. The issue of core investment is a big one. The issue of core investment is a big issue. The program is strategic partnership is defined into four categories. There's a mentor, there's shared equity, there is a core management, there is contract work. Now, the mentorship is supposed to be not resident but should be living in close proximity or farming in that same farming district. It defeats the objective of mentorship if we have a mentor who lives in Gauteng who's mentoring something in the Free State. Those mistakes at the beginning of recap happen. So you end up paying these traveling costs. So the hours the mentor is supposed to be spending mentoring, they spend them traveling between the properties. Those are mistakes that happen at the beginning of the recap program. Equity, share equity. That is where we are supposed to see this core investment. In mentorship, the strategic partner is paid on the basis of the hours they spend providing the mentorship. There is no expectation of core investment. It is a shared equity that there is an expectation of core investment. Now, with practically all the strategic partners, very few of them are keen to put their own money on the table, which is a problem, which then means that the state captures the biggest risk in the enterprise. And there's an expectation that the state is going to be compensating more. I the relationship with local government could be much better than what it is. It could be much better than what it is. As much as at a district level, district municipalities are participating at the selection level, but the link to LEDs and IGPs is not as strong as it should. We are hoping that with the establishment of the district land reform committee that we are going to be establishing with the implementation of the National Development Plan and the development of the Rural Development Plan, municipalities are going to play a central role. As a matter of fact, in our amendment, municipalities, district municipalities in particular, Minister has said they have a responsibility of chairing a government structure at that level that oversees and monitors implementation. That is the role they are expected to play. They haven't fully taken up that role, but that is the role as far as their outcomes level is concerned that they are expected to play. So we do expect that that role can play. There are these challenges of compliance, the reporting, I think I've alluded to, and the conduct management, which were picked up as a result of which then people are able to deviate from the agreement. But the fact that you pick them up is that does mean that we are having some form of monitoring, some form of controls, because if we didn't, we wouldn't pick up that they have not they have from their agreement. Collaboration with other institutions, the one area where we are trying to build this collaboration. Maybe we haven't collaborated with NGOs. That's a very, very good point that you with NGOs that are whose sole purpose of existence is to provide training, they receive donor funding from other countries so that they provide. We don't have that kind of strong relationship. There could be a relationship with your agri-sector that receives the money from that is allocated to them, but it's not strong enough with the NGOs and universities. I think the issue of mentors that have been chosen that have failed in their own funding venture has been sharply raised by our beneficiary and has been a source of a lot of discussion and unhappiness. And I suspect in many of the instances where the beneficiaries have opted to kick out the strategic partner is where they felt that this guy that has been imposed on me as my mentor is not helping me. He has failed in his own funding endeavors. Now he's been asked to come and help me. So those are some of the challenges we've come across.
Five that exist in the system, 8 to 9 to 8 to 12 to 7. add on what your colleagues have just on. The procurement process of the regeneration and development happens at the level of the farm, where the strategic partner and the beneficiary will agree on the items that will be purchased. But we also encourage that the both partners, the beneficiary and the strategic partner, should have a competitive code that will then allow them to procure. They don't use only one code, they use three different codes. The reason being that we need the strategic partner to introduce this beneficiary as much to more suppliers so that they can be able to be known at the time when the strategic partner is interested, and they can be able to procure it on themselves. They also say after procurement, they need also to make sure that the account on the in line with what is appropriate in the display. The other issue that I also want to factor is the issue of the how recapitulated is implemented in terms of the numbers of the SPC and the table where the question was saying you've got so many numbers projects under leadership and so many under project partner and other they don't have. Within municipal development, we don't wait for the project to fall and we intervene. As and when we go, there are projects that need agent intervention. And with agent intervention, we don't wait for the project to get the strategic partner. If the utility is not there and the chickens are in the house, we need to restore it to the utility as agent as possible. That is why we are doing agent intervention. That is why you see some of the projects don't have strategic partners as reflected in those slides. There's in another interest, I want to have responded on it. The last one that I also wanted to flag is the socio-economic impact. Like DG said, we reached a very new project program, and we are anticipating to do a full review in terms of the recap to do socio-economic impact, because normally in terms of your MNC, you do your socio-economic impact after 5 years. So this project is still very new, it's not even 5 years. But we did a research review where we appointed the University of Pretoria through DCMP to assist us to check the progress. But the review is still going to be done in terms of the full impact that the program has after 5 years. Thank you.
Some
ones. One of the questions that I didn't ask earlier, I noticed there was a breakdown of the type of training given to the farmers. What's the benchmark? By when do you know somebody is a trained farmer as such? And what type of benchmarking are you using for that? Or is it just lots of different courses? And then there's another question I have in terms of, relates to what Member Madala was saying. Are you linking it up the RECAP funding to incubation, business incubation strategies? And I know there's a couple of universities also doing that type of thing.
Somehow my other question has been missed. This was on KZN, Northern Cape, and Limpopo, where one of your slides shows that you are not expecting any farmers to go through the program. If I understand the steps well. The zeros, I think it's slide 17. Yeah. Of course.
That was brilliant.
Anyway, the number for the Northern Cape and Western Cape, the numbers there, well, they are still rather low, especially if you were to quickly flip on to the slide which shows the number of beneficiaries from your chain. You have to compare that to that kind of level 20. Now, my question was then, what problems are being experienced in those provinces that you're expecting such a low number of people will actually go through and graduate to a higher level such that can be certification for exiting. Also, on this issue, Chair, of socio-economic impact, my fear is that even with wage, I've had the responses both from the DG as well as the gentleman who made the presentation as well as the Honorable Deputy Minister. My feeling is that maybe yearly there should be some information generated on the socio-economic impacts of the program, because we want to change people's lives, and this is one of the stated objectives of the program. I am afraid that if we're going to wait for 5 years for a formal grant presentation or results, because we may have missed out on a number of things, especially that we're not having 100% success rate. What we're doing. And we appreciate the progress. We're not being critical, on that. We appreciate where we're coming from. So my input and my suggestion is that, let's try and get this report at least on an annual basis so that we can see that there's progress and progress. Thank you.
If you ask if you like in the synchronization of government policy, we are a country where there's a very clear labor dispensation to workers of rights. But the question I want to ask is that on these farms and the system by governments, are there ways and means that the farmers are being encouraged to practice fair labor policies? And indeed, whether the conditions under which the workers are found, laborers are living, whether indeed those things are being addressed. We found there was a situation where a farmer who is, I think,
and the Commerce and Community Airlines issue. But when the obviously the government party and also the president talk about the same thing, the right California transformation, that in particular this one program needs an overhaul of the region, and I invite your comments, such that it becomes such a economic radical transformation too. One starting from the mentorship and all that I talked about, that they should be transformative agents and people of the high productivity, you know, and generally it is through them that that we will flounder regardless in terms of the program itself. The budget share is 25% whatever is appropriated for from this. I think it's a fair one. But the other linked issue is the issue about, if you look into the construction industry, which I'm not so much knowledgeable about, but the historical economic boundaries in that theory let our people to be the contractors, but ultimately that contractor must go to hire the plant there by whoever has the plant. So when they don't come privileged, still remain privileged, these contractors can compete whoever wants to come to me for the plant. Probably someone would be an issue strategic partners to just make sure that we push back the frontier, but also in terms of the economy. And my last throw, generally over the overall framework that I'm saying, perhaps needs a complete overhaul. We go to the empowerment aspect. There is the farm, the agriculture supply. To what extent, instead of the farm worker drive, the farm workers being shareholders in that, even if by 25% or 30% or 40% in that revamped context, because it's our government money anyway, therefore the farm workers could as well be shareholders. That's my take. It comes quite a number of other small individual questions into an overarching strategic question like with the second phase of practical economic transformation.
Which were left by owners of the
those that are struggling are the ones that have said, no, that they want to start business, then after drafting the business plan, after submitting the business plan, then you start to ask yourself, we know the history of our people.
Mm-hmm.
Who's supposed to draft for them the business plan? The last one, I think, is the issue of the penalty. If the certain departments are not complying to the other, what penalty are they supposed to report in time? They don't report in time. That results to, you know, to the negative audit, which as of any case, audit findings. Then if they fail to report on time, then what is the study department is doing to make sure that they comply to the agreement? The funds that have been put, I think from the first page of the presentation, what plans do we have put in place to make sure that this doesn't happen again? What happened this? Because we're giving people funds for them to produce, to impact the economic growth, fight poverty, hunger, malnutrition, and other things. But if we give people funds, they go to the bank, pay for the loans, they fail to pay them, the funds being the option. What plans are we taking to make sure that the funds, whether those issues or through distribution, are not being sold by the beneficiary or not being auctioned by whatever institution. The water issue. We can train and train and train and train. But one of the challenges that has been mentioned by the beneficiary, some of the beneficiary, is the issue of water. I understand the issue of the education system, but how do we make sure that we really are to deal with that challenge? The evaluation, I think there was an indication before that DPM is also doing an assessment on this program. I don't know whether the report is not ready, but I hope that if the report is ready or it will be submitted in future to the department, the committee will have access to that particular report.
Different role
flavor regime as opposed to the rest of the farmers in the country. The laws of the land apply equally the same way to them. So that is what is expected of them. We may not be religiously checking that out perhaps, but the Department of Labor expects that if they will come across those conditions, I'm sure they will deal with them the same way they deal with any other landowner who is not complying with the laws of them. That's a good thing, because then there's a different department altogether that has for that responsibility to monitor the kind of compliance. It won't be like the department that's going to police itself. On the radical social economic transformation. Here today we are reporting about what we have been doing, looking at the rear view mirror. Going forward, all the departments, as the honorable members may be aware, have been asked to develop by the Trump administration to develop 5-year 2015-2020 strategy plan. We believe that the offerings we are working on together with our colleagues in the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and with the province will represent that radical shift going into the future. We have specifically looked at the National Development Plan, which basically says this is the potential of what we can do in terms of the number of jobs. We have analyzed no less than 12 commodities in the agricultural value chain. And we have looked at those that are least transformed. We have looked at those that are fairly transformed. And we are clear which ones are likely to produce the kind of jobs that the NDP promises, the 1 million or so jobs. And we are working together with our colleagues in National Treasury and the colleagues at the Department of Trade and Industry to come with the necessary tools, policy levers, and incentives to bring about that change. And the program such as RECEP, Reconciliation and Development, will be part of that arsenal where we will be bringing about those changes. The role of the other government programs, one of the things we are busy with now is that we are analyzing all of what is government offering in the name of support to various farmers. What we're trying to also avoid, I hear the Honorable Chair say, when you have acquired the land, you're given recap, where do the other government departments come with their various support initiatives? At some point, you must avoid the situation where those who benefited from recap, they go and queue for cash, and they go and queue for another government program and another government program, and they become a professional grant seekers. And at any given time, there's going to be a huge number of people that require government assistance vis-à-vis the resources available at the disposal of the state. So it is not very good to give one in the same category or same group a whole lot of resources when there are all sorts of other trying to find that balance together with our colleagues in agriculture. I think on the exit, at the beginning of the presentation, what we're saying is that in 2009, we took, we evaluated the program of land reform. RECAP only started in 2010. So when you are counting exit, Honorable Chair, you can't start from 2009, because RECAP was in there in 2009. We were evaluating the program in 2009. We were evaluating the land reform program to say, no, it started in 2010, the RECAP as a program. Then I will come to the end. No, maybe, Chair, we said it in 2010, 2011.
Okay.
So in 2009, we were saying we were taking a look at how land reform has performed. And why, if we continue to distribute land and not provide support, what was the nature of intervention that was required? And then RECAP was born in 2010 and we started implementing it towards the end of that year. I think the reason why we are reviewing the contract, Madam Chair, is because it's precisely because of the non-compliance. In the past, they were not explicit penalties. One of the things that the department would withhold as a penalty, as it were, if the department decides to withhold the next trench as a form of penalty. But if you are withholding that next trench, you are punishing the farmer. You are not punishing the affected party. So that's why we are trying to find a balance. You see, what is going to be the right penalty for the farmer, for the strategic partner as well?
Is there any other questions?
Do the land use development program.
the issue of electricity before we transfer the property, we make sure that the former owner clears the account of the electricity. But what we've been seeing across the generator project is that after we clear the electricity usage by the former owner, our beneficiary, because of network support, we didn't manage to get it to catch up with the electricity bill. So with the research and development, we are trying to also assist them to pay the electricity through their first production cycle. So they knew that in the second production cycle, they will be able to pay the electricity bill. And also in terms of when we acquire the new property, we also do the connection of those electricity for the new user. The other one was level monitoring. In our case, in the case of the development, this beneficiary and strategic partner, they are sitting on the weekly basis. What happens within the business plan, there's what we call implementation plan. In that implementation plan, the beneficiaries and the men are on the ground. They are sitting and drafting the weekly implementation plan based on the activities that they will be doing during the week. And also, that will come into the monthly plan, which will then the official will then be in the meeting with them to get a report on what has happened during that month. That is how we are monitoring the implementation. The other issue was who is drafting the business plan. We are saying as a department, we acknowledge that the beneficiaries on the ground, we don't have the know-how on drafting the business plan. This is why we are calling the strategic partner to come on board to assist with the drafting of the business plan. But we are encouraging the beneficiaries and strategic partner to stay together when drafting the business plan. We don't want the business plan where the strategic partner will just sit in box and draft the business plan. The business plan should be informed by the needs of the farm and also what the beneficiary wants to see on the farm. So should that beneficiary and the strategic partner, they will draft the business plan together and they will be presenting it together at the provincial committee and also the business committee. So that you can get your owner, if you need to generate your ownership of that business plan.
Question that's addressed by honorable member answered, but
first question. The counting of years. Let's see if on anything but the counting the numbers of ordinary neutrons. If you start with the 2010-11, say, that's the first year, let's say. And 11-12 is the second year. 12-13 is the third year. 13-14 is the fourth year. 14-15, the one you are currently in. If the calendar year ends in December or the financial year ends in March, is the 16th. I just want to satisfy myself, Chair, based on your question earlier, that we're not speaking 16 that we saw on the visual future. We're not seeing the 16 that we saw on the screen. That the correction to that, and even the follow-up documentation that could satisfy us that your target, you're not moving targets. Your target in terms of years are clearly stable so that we know the everything. Where there's variation, then there's reasons for variation. And we don't vary the years, you know, but we vary the outputs by the best targets. That's what the only follow-up should be on your point, because I felt that we tend to shift in ground then.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
looking like the Montante. I am not from Tante.
Indicated that he will be from the city of